And we've had Andos Gareko One Whiskey Hotel Charlie from the documentary archive Radio Communications in Vienna. And I'm talking to Vladimir Bykov, United Alpha 4 Whiskey Hotel X-Ray World Traveler and DXer. Vladimir, thanks for talking to us. And perhaps we start by letting you tell a little bit more about yourself.
I am about 1,000 kilometers east of Moscow in the Urals area. Well, I was born in 1969. And then, naturally, I went to a school here in Russia, studied electrical engineering, spent 2 years in the Russian military as a communications sergeant. I have a wife. Sometimes she travels with me. And as far as supporting, I have a business, a few businesses running. So, and now with the internet technology, information technology, you know, you couldn't imagine that probably 10, 20 years ago, but now you can manage a lot of things being far away. And I am in the position where I supervise things. I don't necessarily get involved into everyday management, and that gives me the chance to actually have a bit more free time and do what I want. Well, it all began in 1983, when I went to a youth club where there was a radio section, and I saw people playing with the radio, more engineering construction, but then I also saw a station, and then the trustee introduced me to the station, and it was interesting, so I thought, oh, I'll try that. At that time, it was kind of difficult to travel to see the world in the Soviet Union, so then I thought, oh, it's nice. I could talk to the people, practice English, and do things like that. And then, you know, I got on the air, started talking, and that developed more interest. And gradually, I saw it was a way of traveling. And, you know, I went to the technical school where I studied engineering, and I spent 2 years in the army. Well, I was also with the communications, and, you know, gradually it all began like that. Well, right now I'm in Russia, but I spend a lot of time in the other parts of the world. Sometimes I'm with the radio, sometimes I'm not with the radio. If there is a chance, I try to get on the radio. If there's no chance, I do it sometime later. I've been to many places where a lot of people want QSOs from, but it just doesn't work out for the time being.
Wasn't it difficult in the beginning to travel to foreign countries?
It was all gradual, you know. It's you are getting more and more addicted to that. First time you go for a week, then you go for two, then you go for a month, and then you find that half a year is not a problem. Then you think, why not do it longer? Or not as much longer, you just do it until you actually finish what you have decided to do. First time was pretty long time ago. I went to the States when I was still at the university, and I was working as a camp counselor in one of the camps, and I had my Russian license at that time, but I wanted to have an American license as well. So with the help of a friend of mine, Billy, AA4NU, I got the books and I passed the tests, and I got my gradually in a few months I got my extra class AC4 land ticket, which I still hold, and, you know, and I liked it, and I decided to do it a little longer, a little further, and I found it more exciting, not just to travel, but to get on the radio, and I liked the challenge of getting the license, getting to the place where nobody had ever seen a ham, and then convincing the people that it was okay, and then, you know. And actually, it wasn't very bad, because most of the time you get to the places like that, they're better from the ham point of view. You get clearer conditions and better propagation, you know. So there was a game and a challenge, and I mean, that's what hobby is all about, you know. But some people like it on the other side, you know, they chase the exes. And I guess I was just challenging myself. I was trying to make people happy. At the same time, I was trying to do something which was a little bit more difficult than you know, you would probably want to expect to have.
You don't carry much equipment with you, and do you plan in advance, or do you just go from place to place as it happens?
I do travel light because I believe that equipment being less sophisticated is more reliable in the first place, and it is also attracting less attention from the people that might sometimes want to separate it from you. So especially if you are in a dangerous area, you know, or relatively dangerous, insecure area. As far as the plan, I, like in the Pacific, I had my plane tickets and the licenses from the first day till the last day. Logistically, arrangement-wise, it was quite complicated. So, but I didn't tell anyone about it until I finished. I knew all the plans from the very first day. With Africa, it was a little different because it involved a lot of waiting. So I decided for myself, okay, I would cover this and this and this and this country I'll probably travel to. I also decided that the policy, the attitude would be no itineraries as such. I mean, I just want to cover the area, and which way I connect them, I see, I go with the flow, I see how it works. I might come to the place, apply for the license, then come back. As far as the number of days waiting for the license, I just waited until it was all over. Sometimes it involved weeks, sometimes days, like waiting for ships. When in Africa, you know, one day is like a week. You'll wait a day, but then you wait a month, and then, you know, they promise and it doesn't happen. So you really have to be patient. No itineraries, no dates, but you have the plan. So the plan, you don't really give up, but on the time, you have to be flexible.
Forgive me for asking the question. You must have been asked time and again, but could you tell us some of the most pleasant experiences you had and the most unpleasant ones?
Well, I guess it wasn't very nice to lose a finger. Pleasant? Well, my most memorable experience was in Yemen when the Ministry of Communications, the people, they couldn't get a license for me, but they really supported the idea, so they accompanied me in their ministry's cars all the way to the Saudi border and protected me from the security officers not to have my equipment confiscated. And when the security people tried to do that in Sana'a, the people of the Ministry of Communications, they said no. He came to us, they said about me. He gave it to us himself. He's a good guy. We shouldn't treat him like that. They said it was, I don't know, it's not so much of an anecdote, but it's nice. One thing that was funny, it was in Vanuatu when I was walking at night and there was a pig sitting next to a palm tree. And that pig was tied up with a rope to the palm tree. And I was walking between the pig and the palm tree. And when the pig saw me, it tried running away. But instead of that, it started making circles around the palm tree. And because I was between the pig and the palm tree, in no time, that pig tied me up with its rope, my ankle, to the palm tree, but made a couple of circles and still tried running away. So you can imagine it's squeezing and squeezing and squeezing the rope. It's a serious plastic rope, you know. And I can't do anything about it. The pig is like 3 meters away from the palm tree. I'm tied up with that rope to the palm tree. I can't move. I'm trying to pull that pig back to release myself. It doesn't work. And you know what happened? It made a few more loops like that, but it got too close to me. It realized it was too dangerous. Not me, the pig realized that. And it started running the other way around, and that's how the pig actually released me. But the wound that I had after that plastic rope, it wouldn't heal for about a month or 2 months in the Pacific. You know, I had to sit like an hour in the salty water every day to be able to recover. It wasn't very easy. You know, a lot of blood and the other stuff. That wasn't very exciting, you know.
Vladimir, you are a strange person in so far as you do not print out computer labels. Why do you do that?
Well, I don't personally write all of them myself. I have a few people helping me. And I traveled reliability reasons, I chose to use the paper logs, just because a computer and a disk, and me being alone, you know, it wouldn't just work. I knew it would just happen that I would lose either the computer, because it was just going into extra weight, so there would be a problem with the disk, and then the battery would also be a problem. Very often there wasn't enough electricity, so, you know, there are a few considerations. They might seem strange, or they might seem not very logical, but if you're on the other side, if you are there and you see it from there, then you will probably agree with me, but I mean, most of the people don't know about it. So basically, then when I ended up with the paper logs, there was an option of either typing them. My handwriting is not very clear, so I would have had to ask somebody to do that. That actually meant having mistakes, and that actually meant that some people would probably not be in the log. You know, I also put some comments in the log as per the QSO. You know, sometimes it helps to recover a QSO of some people, because I'm very particular about people getting their cards. What I found out, the problems are not only Russian-based. Very often, certain areas, certain counties in the States, they are prone to problems. Like, I send to W4 area, and for some reason, everybody gets them, except for the zip code of 32800. I am trying to make sure that people who don't get the cards, they let me know. We have a certainly reliable system of tracking the cards back here. We have indicators on the envelopes when the cards were sent out, like what cards and everything. So it doesn't take very long time to locate the card. Then we look it up and let the people know if it has been sent or it hasn't, or we need to resend or whatever, you know, because I don't just want people to work me. I want them to have the cards. It's an international problem. And very often in the postal service right now in the world, the employees are low paid, and they may take advantage of something coming thick and interesting, you know?
So we come to the unavoidable last question. Where do you go next?
Logically, I'll probably go where I haven't been to with the radio. So I give you two clues. That's the second one. And I'll probably go to the place that is needed, because I would like to give people the area and the country which is not available for various reasons. That's what happened with Rwanda. Everybody was saying that it wasn't possible to get a license. I thought I wouldn't just give up. I came there one time, I talked to the people, I came there again, I wrote a letter to the president, I met the deputy minister of defense. We talked, he listened, he supplied me with a QTH, he provided three officers to watch me. They watched me for a few days, then they agreed. So I think the next place would be a challenging place, but when it will be, I'd say after the QSLs are out. It's just not very logical to have some QSLs left behind and to create a new piles of cards. I guess that gives you enough clues to figure out what may happen next. The fact that it will happen, I pretty much think so. I don't think it will happen tomorrow. That gives a bit of spice to the adventure, and people have some fun when they watch me, when they follow, and when they make the QSO, you know.
So this was Vladimir Bykov, United Alpha 4 Whiskey Hotel X-Ray, talking to us today, and I'm Wolf Harand, Oscar Echo 1 Whiskey Hotel Charlie, from the Documentary Archives Radio Communication in Vienna.